Hello and welcome to the Commander Theory Podcast. I'm Nick Beatman, and today I am once again joined by Ben, probably better known as DNA on our Discord server. Ben and I are going to be going through all the main deck cards from the Doctor Who precons. Thanks for coming back on the show, Ben.
Of course. Anything for my favorite magic podcasters.
All right. Well, we've got plenty of cards to get through. It seems like there's a lot of powerful and interesting stuff going on in these precons. Do you want to lead us off with the first card we're going to be talking about today?
Absolutely. All right. So first up, we have a white card named Crack in Time, showing the cracks from, I think this was the 11th Doctor's overarching story beats about how there was these cracks in time that were like sucking people in. Crack in Time is 3 and a white for an enchantment. It has Vanishing 3, which means it comes into play with 3 time counters. Each of your upkeeps, you remove a time counter, and when the last counter is removed, you sacrifice the enchantment. And it says, when Crack in Time enters the battlefield and at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, exile target creature and opponent controls until Crack in Time leaves the battlefield. So, Nick, got thoughts on this guy?
Yeah, it seems like an interesting take on a Banishing Light effect. It does have this like built-in method of going away, kind of similar to like Parallax Wave. But similar to Parallax Wave, if you're able to, say, like proliferate it, if you're able to add time counters on it, you can potentially like get a lot of value out of it. It makes me wish that there was a commander that could let you skip your upkeep.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool, for sure. I think that for me, I don't know. It's good value if you have a way to just keep it going in perpetuity, but 4 mana feels like a lot, and I believe one of the benefits of Parallax Wave, it's been a while since I've seen the card, aren't you able to like manually remove the counters to exile more things?
Yes, so the Parallax Wave does have like the ability to react at instant speed.
Yeah, so the fact that you have to wait and you only get this once on each of your turns over these turn cycles, I don't know. I don't usually find my enchantments lasting more than 2 or 3 turn cycles anyways in the average deck, which is about how long the Vanishing lasts. So I love the synergy with time counter stuff.
All right, maybe this is one that's waiting on the right commander to really make it good. But how about the next card? I think this one might have some broader applications.
Oh, yeah.
So this is Everybody Lives. It's 1 and a white for an instant. All creatures gain hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. Players gain hexproof until end of turn. Players can't lose life this turn. And players can't lose the game or win the game this turn. What do you think about Everybody Lives?
Overall, I like this card, but I dislike what it represents.
Okay.
So I actually think that Teferi's protection is a problem in a lot of ways, mostly in that it just invalidates a lot of things. And I think the more effects we get that do this sort of thing, and this is, I should clarify, this is not as good as Teferi's protection or anything, but the more effects we get that are like this, the more that game length increases. I guess, I don't know. I know a lot of people are looking at this and they're just like, it's just kind of a counterspell, right? And yeah, it is, but I don't know. I just go back and forth on this kind of effect. And I think ultimately too many of this type of effect is bad for Commander, at least okay. For game length.
I like White having a bit of reactivity in this way. Because it's doing a couple things here. I don't think it's unfair to characterize it as like kind of a counterspell, because like not only can it say protect your board if somebody's casting a board wipe, it'll keep you from dying to like a lethal Exsanguinate or a lethal Crater Hoof. It just like a lot of the it invalidates a lot of the like finishers you're most worried about, and it also like is able to answer board wipes and like keep your things on the board.
I definitely think it's very strong.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you said, it is versatile and it does come down and stop a lot of things. I guess I would just prefer, if this was a white counterspell, the fact that it just, I don't know, maybe it's the templating, it's throwing me.
Okay, because yeah, I think that a lot of things that Teferi's protection invalidates, like a lot of them, a counterspell would go pretty far to invalidating, or like a fog would go pretty far to invalidating. So I don't think this is like terribly far outside of White's color pie. I do agree that it like can slow the game down, and I think Wizards might need to figure out if they want White and Commander to be more of a color that is the one ending the game, or that is the one like surviving and grinding out a victory.
It is kind of feeling like White is moving towards that grind. What with all of their new card advantage engines being kind of like overtime engines instead of all at once.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. To be fair, they are getting some new tools. We got the White Crater Hoof. We've gotten some, we've gotten Sky Hunter, Strike Force, like a couple good,
true.
A couple good anthems. But you're right. If they put a lot of power into cards that also double as fogs, then it could really slow the game down for sure.
Yeah, that's really all I'm worried about. I do think this is fully within White's color pie, and that tools for them to interact on the stack especially are really good and important.
Any last like synergies or useful cards you want to point out before we move on to the next one?
All I'll say is I kind of wish this exiled itself. Because it just means that it's very easy to abuse from the graveyard in red and blue decks, and you've got, I guess it's what, a 2-minute instant, so it falls under Sunforger and other like small instant packages akin to that. So those are all potent synergies.
It does seem pretty sweet to put this under an Isochron Scepter just like fog every turn. Not that you couldn't do something similar with like Holy Day or whatever, but you know,
true.
This does cover a lot more bases than that kind of effect. All right, I think we can move on to the next card. Do you want to read this one off?
Yeah. All right. So the next one is Everything Comes to Dust. So this is 7WW for a sorcery. That has Convoke, which means your creatures can help cast the spell. Each creature you tap while casting the spell pays for 1 or 1 mana of that creature's color. And then it has Exile all creatures except those that share a creature type with a creature that convoked this spell, all artifacts, and all enchantments.
So this is pretty neat. Could be potentially a good tool for like go wide typal decks. It can be like a Plague Wind without too much difficulty. What do you think about Everything Comes to Dust?
I think making it truly one-sided is going to be tricky depending on what creature types you're actually playing. Because if you are playing a token deck and you can just like slam it all into whatever one creature token, but let's say, for example, you know, you tap a human for this. So many things are humans.
Mm-hmm.
You tap a wizard for this, or a cleric, or a warrior. Like, that covers so many creatures out there right now. I almost wonder, It makes me wonder just how usable this is for the creature side of things. Maybe it feels more like a exile artifacts and enchantments board wipe that can snipe a few creatures that aren't yours.
Okay. I see what you're saying, and it definitely could be the case that you might want to run this in decks that are less likely to be helping your opponents with the by matching creature types, because you're right, there are a lot of humans out there. Maybe running this in a human type deck is going to significantly reduce its potency, but maybe angels might be safe.
I was thinking about angels. My only thought about that one is, are angels too expensive to really get your bang out of the convoke here?
Yeah, that's tricky. I guess I would want to look at the average mana cost in a Giada deck, because she herself is relatively cheap. And I feel like she prioritizes cheaper angels because you want to maximize the +1/+1 counters that you're granting. So you want to get a lot of guys out. So,
and we have gotten a lot of decent cheaper angels recently. Maybe in some of the new dinosaur decks. I know that my buddy's Geshoth deck usually plays a lot of the smaller dinosaurs to fill in the early game.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them don't have multiple creature types on them, just dinosaurs. So,
okay. So that definitely could be a good use for this card. So, 10 mana is a ridiculous amount, but if you can reduce this to, at what mana cost do you feel good casting this? How much reduction do you want to get before you feel really happy about your everything's come to dust?
5, at least.
Okay. That seems about right.
I think. Yeah, because at 6, I'm farewelling, so.
Yeah. True. Any last thoughts on this card, or are you ready to move on to the next one?
I'm ready.
Okay. Next up, we have 4 Nox. This is 2 and a white for an enchantment with vanishing 4. So enters the battlefield with 4 time counters. You remove 1 each upkeep, and then when the last is removed, you sacrifice it. And then at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, draw a card. So this is one of those slow white card advantage engines you were talking about before. How do you feel? How do you feel about the numbers on this card? Is this something that you're interested in?
I really like this card. I don't put Phyrexian Arena in all my decks, but there are decks that I play it in. Usually ones that are okay with kind of just sitting around and accumulating value without looking particularly threatening. And I think this card is good at doing that. You're accumulating value. You're not really that threatening. And it's not a priority target, so it might get blown up if somebody uses a Wrath, but they're not going to specifically blow this up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you're getting, 3 draws? How does the math work on this guy? Is it 3 draws?
Yeah, you should be getting 3 draws.
Yeah, so you get 3 draws off of this, so that's 3 entire round of turns. I think that's fine. I mean, if you play this on turn 3 and it goes away on turn 6 and you've drawn 3 cards from it, I think that is perfectly fine, slow value. I think I'd be more inclined to put this in a deck that had some proliferate or some time travel, because it is important to note that the time travel mechanic that they added, you can put time counters on your stuff with it too, not just take them off. So.
Yeah.
So it is a second way to do that.
And there are some ways to reuse this or get additional value. Not a lot, but if you were really desperate, you could, put this on top of your library with a Hall of Heliod's Generosity after it ran out. There are some white blink engines that can hit enchantments. So that might be another way to just get additional value out of it. If you've built your deck to run some of the mass artifact or enchantment reanimation in white, then it might be free to get it back after it dies. So there's a couple things you can do with it. It has some hooks for potential synergies.
Yeah, it's also, it's at 3 mana, which means it falls under the 3 or less permanent clause that white seems to be moving towards.
Oh, that's a good point.
So many things these days are, basically they've categorized it as 3 or less. Sometimes it's non-land, sometimes it's any permanent, sometimes it's creatures, but...
Yeah, so you've got
three
your...
3 or less is the sweet spot.
Yeah, so you got your Sun Titan, you got your Guardian Scale Lord... a couple ways to just get kind of free value off of this. So I am cautiously optimistic. I want to do some testing with it and see how it plays.
Yeah, I'm pleased with the card for sure. I picked up a copy of it, and every time I look at it, my heart goes out because I love the scene very, very much. Mm. So...
All right. Next card is one I am very excited about. Do you want to read this card off?
Oh, yeah. All right. So this is the Knight of the Doctor. It is 4 white-white for an enchantment saga. And chapter 1 is destroy all creatures. Then chapter 2 is return target legendary creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. Then put your choice of a first strike, vigilance, or lifelink counter on it. Hoo boy.
So this is probably the most easy, well, okay, not probably. This is the most easily exploited saga ever printed. It's really not hard to just kind of soft lock your opponent from having creatures, because you can easily, like if you have a Nesting Grounds, of course, being the land that taps for a colorless, and you can pay one, tap, move a counter from target permanent you control to another target permanent you control. So you just take off the lore counters from your Knight of the Doctor and just keep resetting it to 0 so that each turn you get the destroy all creatures. Nice and oppressive. you can also just let it die and then put it back on top of your library with Hall of Heliod's Generosity. And I don't think you actually, and yeah, you're kind of losing out on a draw step by doing that, but I don't think you like actually have to do it very many times. Like once your opponents get the joke and realize that you can just wrath the board kind of whenever you want, they're just going to stop playing creatures. And that's of course like a situation you can break symmetry on really easily, especially, you know, if you're like a control deck. So this card just seems amazing, very, very easy to use. And it's so convenient that it has only 2 chapters because it just makes it like die sooner so you can reuse it sooner. I love this card. This is awesome. How do you feel about it?
I am right there with you. This card is incredible. It has tons of hooks. I'm so glad to see a saga whose first chapter is just wipe the board. I like that the second chapter is pretty much gonna reanimate your commander the turn after it kills everything, assuming you let your commander go in the graveyard, or it can reanimate something else. I am fairly certain that unfortunately with Narsi, their recent Abzan Saga commander that also does enchantment sacrifice shenanigans, I'm pretty sure that this, she would come back after it has sacrificed itself, so you don't get the 6 life drain trigger and the extra card draw, but
I think you would, because it says sacrifice after 2. So the 2 ability has to fully resolve for the sacrifice trigger to go on the stack. Oh, I think you would be able to get back Narsi.
Well, then that's even better. Because I have a Narsi deck, and I was like, so, I mean, I'll put this card in it, but I don't know how well it'll work with her.
No, I think it's going to be great. And, you know, it costs 6. That's a huge drain. It seems amazing. So the next card is the Pandorica. This is 2 and a white for a legendary artifact. You may choose not to untap the Pandorica during your untap step. 1 and a white, tap. Untap another target non-land permanent, then it phases out. It can't phase in for as long as the Pandorica remains tapped. When the Pandorica becomes untapped or leaves the battlefield, that permanent phases in. Activate only as a sorcery. What do you think about the Pandorica?
Well, it's certainly good at hosing commanders. I mean, this is Oubliette, except it costs 5 mana.
Yeah, but you can move it around. You can let somebody out of jail and throw somebody else in the dungeon.
Right? You can extort people.
Yes.
I'll give you your commander back if you do XYZ.
Hell yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah, and of course you can break that 5 mana up over multiple turns.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, also, it is legendary, which is a bonus for white for interactions with white cards for tutoring, special draw, reanimation. It's an artifact. It's cost 3 or less, so it's very easy to hop in and out of your graveyard. Decently easy in white, at least. It'll have artifact synergies as well, so...
It seems great. I definitely hope that we see more cards in white that can search out legendary permanents, because the synergy there seems awesome. But it is a little unfortunate that you can only use it as a sorcery, so you can't be reactive. It's definitely like a really proactive play. But that's fine. There's still a lot you can do with it. And, you know, it hits any like non-land permanent type. So it's not going to be able to interrupt like combos or really messed up synergies, but it is just good at like being a nice slow cop to take control of whatever's scariest on the board. Well, speaking of putting things in jail, do you want to read off this next card?
Sure will. So this is Trial of a Time Lord. It is a 1 white for an enchantment saga. And it has 4 chapters. The first 3 chapters are each exile target non-token creature an opponent controls until Trial of a Time Lord leaves the battlefield. And then on the 4th chapter, starting with you, each player votes for innocent or guilty. If guilty gets more votes, the owner of each card exiled to Trial of the Time Lord puts that card on the bottom of their library.
So note that unlike a lot of cards like this, a tie does not work out in your favor. If it's a 4-player game, like of course you're going to vote guilty, but you got to get 2 of the remaining 3 players to vote guilty in order to get stuff on the bottom. So it seems kind of unlikely. Like I've had people, you know, like blow up my Grasp of Fate, even though it was like keeping like other opponents' scary stuff away. I think people just want their stuff back. So I think it's likely going to see a lot of votes for innocent with this level 4. But of course, like you don't have to play this card fairly. You can use some of the tricks we've been talking about to just like keep doing the first couple of chapters. You can use a Nesting Grounds to remove lore counters. You can use a Scholar of New Horizons, that thing from the Brothers War Commander that searches out planes when you remove counters from things. There's a couple.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Forgot about that card.
Yeah. So there's a couple ways to like have like very low cost or no cost ways to manipulate the time counters on this card. Honestly, it looks a whole lot like a Kraken Time. It's just like 1 mana cheaper and maybe slightly easier to mess around with.
That's kind of why I like it more, because as you say, it's 1 mana cheaper. It's easier to interact with to your favor.
Mm-hmm.
It is possible that if you get enough things under this thing, that say, I don't know, will cause someone to win the game if it goes away, that a guilty verdict could come down. I think that I kind of hate this card if played fairly.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because the best way to get a guilty verdict is to exile all things from the same opponent.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's pretty mean. Like, that is a really brutally mean play to just, like, exile a thing from the same person every single turn.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like... Yeah, of course they're going to vote guilty as long as the other person can't like make them feel bad about it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Some games have an archenemy and some have just like a wooby that everyone dumps on.
The problem is that's usually me.
No.
I'm usually the archenemy or the person who stumbles and is targeted because they know that my deck can pop off.
I'm not unfamiliar with that position. All right. That is the last white card we're going to talk about. Do you want to move on to the first blue card?
Let's do it. I love this card.
You're going to have to correct my pronunciation. Is it Auton Soldier or Auton?
I think it's Auton.
Okay. Auton Soldier is 4BB for a 0/0 artifact creature alien soldier. You may have it enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature on the battlefield, except it isn't legendary. It's an artifact in addition to its other types, and it has Myriad. As a reminder, a creature with Myriad, when it attacks, for each opponent other than defending player, you get a token that's a copy of that creature onto the battlefield, tapped and attacking that player or a planeswalker they control, and then you exile the tokens at end of combat. So, what do you think about this 6-mana clone?
Look, it's 6 mana. That's a lot of mana. But I love clones, and I love giving Myriad to things that shouldn't have Myriad. And that makes it worth 6 mana to me.
I am also, like, for a 6-mana card, I'm relatively high on this. There's a lot of play with what's going on here. It's if you have, like, ways to, say, cheat in an artifact, you could do something with that. If you care about, like, having multiple copies of your commander out, it's good for that. And, like, just having... granting Myriad to some random value creature, like, you know, I'm going to play my Auton Soldier as a copy of, I don't know, like Sun Titan or Ravenous Chupacabra, and then getting more of those every time it attacks seems great to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think you probably want some ways to cheat the cost. Like, I don't know if I want to play this fairly all the time, but it does seem like a really cool card.
I'm wondering if I can, I might try it in my mono blue Omen Keel deck, just because I often cheat in all kinds of artifact stuff in that deck. So also Garuda, I'm just, wow.
that
just wow.
That was one of the cards I was thinking. That does sound pretty incredible. We got a lot more to get through, so do you want to read off this next card?
Yeah. So this one's pretty spicy. This is Cyber Conversion. It is blue-blue for an instant, and it just says, turn target creature face down. It's a 2/2 Cyberman artifact creature.
This is just clearly a staple. Like, I mean, this is easily in the top 5, like, blue spot removal spells. It just, like, messes with commanders so badly relative to, like, I mean, yeah, it looks like a Pongify. It looks like a Rapid Hybridization. It looks like a Reality Shift. But just, like, how's your opponent gonna undo it when you hit your commander with this? Like,
yeah, it's the nastiest part of Ixodron, which was turning everybody's commanders face down.
Mm-hmm. So this is, like, one of the cards I'm picking up multiple copies of. It's just, like, such a natural fit for your blue decks.
Yeah, it's already climbing in price, isn't it? Like, this one, I don't think a single person could look at this and be like, nah, man, that won't be a staple.
Oh, yeah. As of the time of recording, it's about $650, $7. We'll see how that progresses over time. Yeah.
So no financial advice, but you may want to pick up a little bit right now if you will plan to use it in the future.
Yeah, and of course, we have an affiliate link in the episode description, so check that out. But moving on to another very good blue card. This is Flesh Duplicate. Blue-blue for a 0/0 creature Shapeshifter Rebel. You may have it enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature on the battlefield, except it has Vanishing 3 if that creature doesn't have Vanishing. What are your thoughts on Flesh Duplicate?
So did I mention that I liked clones? Did I mention that they're even better if they're 2 mana?
Yeah, this card's incredible. Like, if Auton Soldier is the, like, the Cadillac, you know, like, it's got all the frills, it's got all the special features, but it comes with, like, a hefty price tag. Like, Flesh Duplicate is, like, the most bare bones.
This is the Ford Americar. It just gets it done, you know?
And man, like, you're right. Having just a mana value of 2 does open up a lot of possibilities. Like, what are you thinking in terms of, like, synergies with this card?
Honestly, for me, I think that it's going to be a go-to clone for decks that can flicker and move their permanents around. You're already dealing with a lot of ETBs, and the Vanishing basically doesn't even matter in that cases. If you're using a Phantasmal Image, this card can slot into basically the same space. I don't see any reason why it couldn't. If you're doing any of the low-to-the-ground curve decks that sometimes you need to adjust your curve for playing with white, it works really well in that sense. If you're in like white-blue color identity, ironically, it also has the Rebel creature type. And if that is ever relevant, I know some people, there's a few of those like weird Rebel Searcher cards out there.
Unfortunately, it's like it's a really weird color identity for Rebels. Like Rebels were like a white thing and like a little bit of a black thing. I have heard people talking about using Rukarumel, the like 5-color alternate commander from the Sliver precon in Commander Legends or Commander Masters, as like a Rebel commander, because it can grant everything in your library the Rebel creature type, so you can search anything out. Yeah, so if that deck's already like 5 colors and running Rebel Searchers, this might be just like a easy addition there. But you're right. I think this just is kind of like broadly useful. It slots into those combos as you mentioned. I can't wait for the day I like play a Sun Titan, get back a flesh duplicate, it becomes a Sun Titan, get back something else. Like, so fun. It's beautiful. Yeah,
brings a tear to my eye.
I picked up a couple copies of this one. I'll say that much.
Me too.
Okay. Do you want to read off this next card?
Yes. And I love this card. So this is 500 Year Diary. It's 3 and a blue for legendary artifact Clue. 500 Year Diary enters the battlefield tapped. It has tap, add blue for each clue you control. Notably, it itself is a clue, so it'll always tap for at least one. And then it has 2, sacrifice the diary, draw a card, because it is a clue. So this card is awesome.
Yes. There are a lot of clue commanders out there that can just spew the clues, like Lawness, Tivit, Eloise, Inquisitor Eisenhorn. There's just so many. A lot of the, like, there's a bunch of Friends Forever, the, like, Stranger Things cards.
The red-white one. Is that the one that, like, you make a clue for every attacking creature?
Something like that, yeah. I think that one you'd have to, like, pair it with a blue Friend Forever, but still, who cares? There's just a lot of clue decks. It's a great fit for that. I would feel good about this card if I had, like, 2 other clues out. 4 mana, enters the battlefield tapped, taps for 3. I can sack it for a card if I need to. That seems like a reasonable deal. Mm-hmm. What do you think of it?
No, I think that's a great deal. Just the kind of trade-off, because I still play Thran Dynamo, and yeah, it enters battlefield tap, so you don't get that explosive nature, but you can cash it in for a card if you need to. So, and maybe, yeah, if you're guaranteed to have at least 2 other clues, I think you play this. But I'll admit that I've never seen a clue deck played that wasn't just swimming in clues.
I know. I've seen huge stacks, like, running out of Infinite Tokens, like, digging through the couch cushions to get more coins. When this is good, it's going to be absolutely insane. I'm ready to move on to the next card.
Read it off.
This is Nanogene Conversion. 3 and a blue for a sorcery. Choose target creature you control. Each other creature becomes a copy of that creature until end of turn, except it isn't legendary. So we've seen a couple cards like this over the years. Mirror Weave is one that comes to mind. Sakashima's Will is kind of similar.
Yeah.
The first thing that came to mind was Adrix and Nev. So Adrix and Nev being the 2 green blue for a 2/2 Merfolk Wizard. If one or more tokens would be created under your control, twice that many of those tokens are created instead. So you're going to have a lot of tokens naturally. If you make all your tokens non-legendary copies of Adrix and Nev, then like the next token you make is going to like get doubled a billion times. It's going to get doubled once for every copy of Adrix and Nev you have. So it's a fantastic way to go from like, oh, I've got a couple guys, to just like impossible, huge army, unbeatable Alpha Strike Zone. That seemed cool to me. I don't know if there's any other uses you were thinking about for this card.
This card is very similar to what we've seen in the past. And if you have built decks that use things like Mirror Weave and Sakshim as well, etc., then this card is here for you to give you more of that effect. I think there's definitely decks out there that can use it. The classic Biovisionary Button Commander combo works with this guy, for example.
Sure, sure. Yeah, that seems very sweet. If you're running like a blue deck that is able to get a lot of guys onto the battlefield and some of them are good creatures, I think it's not too hard to get good value out of this.
I agree. So our next card is Quantum Misalignment. This is a sorcery for 4 and a blue. Create a token that's a copy of target creature you control, except it isn't legendary and it has a rebound, which, for a reminder, if you cast the spell from your hand, you exile it when it resolves, and then at your next upkeep, you cast the spell a second time without paying its mana cost, and then it will go in your graveyard as normal. What do you think about Quantum Misalignment?
I'm on an Adrix and Nev kick. I'm sorry. But if you target your Adrix and Nev, you're going to get 2 copies of Adrix and Nev, and then when you rebound, you're going to get 8 copies of whatever you target. It's just huge value in that deck. Seems like that is the start of a really explosive game, but I'm sure there's like other decks that can use it. Like, there's plenty of decks that are running Irenicus's Vile Duplication.
Does Orvar use copy effects like that?
Yeah, so like 20% of Orvar decks are running Irenicus's Vile Duplication. I think that definitely makes sense. Also, like, Krakashima decks might be.
Oh, they could be interested. You get 2 chances to bounce it back to your hand with Krark as well.
Yeah, there you go. That seems kind of sweet.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we should clarify Krakashima decks that are not CEDH decks.
Yeah.
I don't think this is good enough for a CEDH.
Yeah, 5 is a little bit much for CEDH. But, you know, for all those fun, fair Krakashima decks out there.
So many of those.
All right. Any last thoughts on Quantum Misalignment, or are you ready to move on?
Just that it's a cool card. I love this effect in particular. It's interesting to see more and more of the it's not legendary. And remember that rebound does trigger all of your cast not from your hand triggers if you're building a deck with that in mind.
Very good. Okay. This next card is Reverse the Polarity. 1 blue-blue for an instant. Choose 1, counter all other spells, switch each creature's power and toughness until end of turn, or creatures can't be blocked this turn. What do you think about this charming little card?
Charming is the right word for this. Clearly, this card was made to one-sided board wipe every wall deck player out there. But more seriously, a counterspell that can also make all your guys unblockable seems good to me. I still sometimes will play, what is the card? Teleportal. Mm-hmm. I enjoy Teleportal as a card. It's an old Ravnica card. It's 1 and a blue. Target creature is +1/+0 unblockable. Sorry, target creature you control. And then it has 5 mana for an overload version, so it does your whole field. So just having all your guys can't be blocked. If you're a creature-centric deck that happens to have blue, and you would like a spell, you want another counterspell for your deck, I could see picking worse ones than this.
It's going to be a counterspell most of the time, and it's definitely, I will concede, it is not the best rate for a counterspell. I think you're basically never going to use the second mode, the like switching power and toughness mode. It's probably never going to happen. So if it's like 90% of the time a cancel, and then like maybe 10% of the time use the third mode, that's not awful. And one thing I really want to highlight about this card, and maybe, I don't know if you caught this, but like, because it's an instant, And the way it's worded, like creatures can't be blocked this turn, you can cast it on your opponent's turns. So most of my blue decks don't have like a huge aggro presence, but it seems like a really powerful bargaining tool where it's like, hey, the board's kind of stalling out here. How about I cast this and you kill player C? That seem fair? I think it has some good like political dimensions to it.
Yeah, I had not caught that, but you were right. This card is an absolute banger for top 10 anime betrayal setup.
For sure. So I think that sounds like a fun little side use for this counterspell. And any last thoughts on this, or do you want to move on to the next card?
We can move on. So this next card is the Flood of Mars. It is 2 blue-blue for a creature, alien, zombie, horror, that is a 3/3 with island walk. And it has water always wins. Whenever the Flood of Mars attacks, put a flood counter on another target creature or land. If it's a creature, it becomes a copy of the Flood of Mars. If it's a land, it becomes an island in addition to its other types.
It would be just easily oppressive if it weren't for the fact that, like, everyone's going to send their guys at you. Like, yeah, you can overwrite everyone's commander, but then those commanders are coming like straight for your face. What do you think about the Flood of Mars?
Yeah, I mean, between Island Walk and its own ability, you're definitely going to be able to attack whoever you want. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's relevant because it is a zombie horror. I don't know how many good horrors there are for the horror decks that have been kind of coming into vogue since the Baldur's Gate stuff. But like you said, once you start messing with people's stuff, they're just going to beat you to death with it.
Yeah, and you've got to be playing like the right kind of deck where you don't care about your creatures, or you like just don't commit a lot of creatures to the board. Because if you have your like Captain Ingothrod out in your horror deck, like I think they're just happily going to overwrite that. Like, I don't think any commander is safe. I was thinking like maybe in a Pillow Fort deck, just because that way you have like a legit shot of protecting yourself against all the floods that are going around, and then they're just all going to be kind of diverted to beating other people's faces in. So it's like nobody has like good creatures anymore. It's all just like unblockable 3/3s and you keep yourself safe from it. You're building the levees up and everyone else is in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that working in your favor.
Let's move on to the black cards. Just a couple I wanted to highlight here. The first is Dalek Drone. 3 black-black for a 3/3 artifact creature Dalek. It has flying and menace and exterminate. When Dalek Drone enters the battlefield, destroy target creature an opponent controls. That player loses 3 life. What do you think about Dalek Drone?
Hold on, let me check my watch. Did we get our 5-mana black creature that blows something up when it comes into play yet in this commander release? It's not a bad thing. I think it's great. It's an artifact too, which is awesome. Like, you can do all kinds of fun, wonky stuff with it for like cheating its costs. But it just cracks me up that we've seen it like 3 times in a row in pretty quick succession.
I am also not complaining. Like, yeah, it's not the same price as it's a little more expensive than a Ravenous Chupacabra. But the artifactness does matter a lot. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of ways to get good value off of that. Like, you know, even some of the commanders in this set, like Ashad, the lone Cyberman. I wouldn't just throw this into any random black deck. I would want it to be a deck that can either like recur this really easily because of its card types, or that can like cheat the cost on it somehow. But man, I am so excited to be like swapping a Dalek Drone with like a Necron Deathmark using my Goblin Welder. Like, that sounds fun as hell. That sounds awesome.
That's some good value magic right there.
Yeah. Good, clean value. So I'm hyped for this card. I like it.
All right. So our next card, our next Dalek, is Dalek Squadron. It is a 2 and a black for a artifact creature Dalek. That is a 3/3 with menace. and it has Myriad. If you're doing Daleks, it's pretty decent, and if you are doing something where Myriad is abusable, probably okay.
Okay, so it has Menace, so I'm going to assume that you're going to be able to get in with the original body, like at an opponent who can't block it effectively. And if that's the case, you are potentially getting like two pieces of sack fodder every turn. You know, if you've got a good sack outlet, it has to be an instant speed sack outlet because they get exiled at the end of combat. But, you know, just a deck that has a lot of cards like Yawgmoth or Attrition, so on and so forth. This is a good sack fodder generator. It's just like the timing is a little inconvenient. But if you can work around that, it seems good.
Yeah, I think you're right. I didn't think of it in that aspect, but there's a lot of commanders that either want to sacrifice a creature or an artifact, because it is both, at instant speed, and getting two extra pieces of fodder per turn for that purpose seems pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in Rakdos. There's a few Rakdos commanders out there that I think could make good use of it.
Yeah, so it seems like a fun one. But perhaps a little bit narrow. The next one is kind of narrow too. Do you want to read this off?
Yeah, sure. This is Vashta Narada. Two and a black for a creature alien horror. It is a 1/1 with indestructible and shadow. For those who don't remember what shadow does, it means that the creature can block and be blocked only by other creatures that have shadow. And then it has Morbid at the beginning of each end step. If a creature died this turn, put a +1/+1 counter on Vashta Narada.
It seems like an amazing target for mutate commanders. Like, giving your commander like indestructible and shadow just means, okay, you're not going to be able to block it. It's really hard to kill. That's a great place to be in. You know, it's not a human, so of course that matters for mutate.
Yeah.
Seems like a really good target for those decks, and maybe it'll grow. Who knows?
Yeah, it might get a little bit bigger. I think it'll be decent in horror decks as well, because it's relatively cheap and pretty efficient for what it does.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to get rid of. And as one of my favorite monsters from Doctor Who, I'm glad to see that it got a pretty cool card.
I hope you don't mind me giving you just like all the difficult to pronounce ones.
No, yeah, please. I'll take them all.
I think I know how to read this next one. This is going to be our first red card. And it is Decaying Time Loop. Three and a red for an instant. Discard all the cards in your hand, then draw that many cards. And it has Retrace, so you can cast it from your graveyard by discarding a land in addition to it paying its other costs. But what do you think about Decaying Time Loop?
Card seems dope. I actually think that the Retrace on this card really makes a huge difference. I wouldn't play it if it didn't have Retrace, I guess, let me put it that way. Mm-hmm. Because we've had this effect a couple of times, this wheel yourself kind of effect, except that you don't actually go up to seven cards, and they haven't really taken off. Some of the ones that say discard all the cards and then draw that many cards plus one, so it replaces the spell itself, do a little bit better. You see that with like Volocute Awakening, although that one has the benefit of also being a land.
Into the Fire, I think, is another one that's worded that way.
Yes, that was another one. Probably a better comparison. But I think with the Retrace, this one does pretty good stuff if you want to wheel away your hand. What's the Ikoria, the old lady that loves to discard cards?
Riel, yeah, the Everwise.
The one, yeah, this seems really good with her. Or anybody who likes you to draw cards, like any of the Niv-Mizzets. This definitely reads it as an Izzet card to me all day, every day.
I don't think it's that difficult to make this card neutral. You know, if you're playing Riel, you're going up on cards. If you're playing either the first or the third Niv-Mizzet, then you're card neutral, because just like by playing the instant or sorcery, you're going to draw a card. Or, you know, you could have an Archmage Emeritus, whatever. It's not that hard. But once you're in that position where it's just at any time I can like basically
get a new hand.
Yeah, get a new hand whenever I want for four mana. That seems fantastic. You can just churn through your deck if you're digging for something. It's just a great way to use unspent mana. So, I mean, and that's kind of just, I guess that's true of a lot of retrace cards, but I like this. I wouldn't run it if I didn't have a lot of ways to get it card neutral. But
I think the other time I would run it is if my graveyard was so much an extra hand that it felt like I was just drawing cards from this and the discard was like not even relevant.
That's a good point too. Yeah.
I played around with the Chainer 2.0 for a little while, and that deck always felt like the cards in my hand were mostly just there to trigger discard effects because I'm playing out of my graveyard the entire time.
Okay, do you want to read off this next card?
Yeah, this one's... I thought you said you're going to be the hard ones to pronounce.
I'll throw you a bone now and then.
All right, so this one is Delete. It is X and red for a sorcery, and it says, Delete deals X damage to each non-artifact creature and each player. What do you think about Delete?
Non-artifact is... not much of a restriction. I think this is just going to kill the majority of things. I don't see a huge number of artifact creatures that matter running around in my meta. You know, it just looks a lot like a typical like earthquake effect. It is worth noting that this is the first one we've seen in a while that hits players, which makes it less good as like a way to control the board, because, you know, if you're playing... if you're being the cop, if you're controlling the board, then you are probably doing it because like you're worried about your life total. So it kind of sucks to have to take damage in the process of protecting yourself. But that line of text does also mean that it can function potentially as a win condition if you're getting to like huge amounts of mana. So pluses or minuses. Do you have any thoughts on it?
I think you've summed it up pretty well. I have moved away from pretty much any card that does damage like this to players, just because there are options that will only hit my opponents. I do like, as you said, the non-artifact clause. We have a little bit of red-white artifact creatures matter as an archetype. It's very small, but it has been growing over time. I think this card fits well into that archetype, and over time will just become better. That archetype also tends to be pretty aggressive. I have a friend who has a deck, uses the... it's from Strixhaven. It was an artifact creature, and it was like, artifact creatures you control have haste, and when you attack with one or more of them, you like blast everybody. I don't remember its name. But it gets your life total pretty low. And in that case, this win con is more likely just to kill all your opponents because you have more life than them.
Well, that sounds pretty sweet. I really like that plan. Let's see. I think with that, we can move on to the next one. This is Ecstatic Beauty. 2 and a red for a sorcery. Exile the top 3 cards of your library. You may play those cards until end of turn. Put 4 time counters on each of those cards that has suspend, and it has suspend 4 for a single red mana. It's kind of just a strictly better act on impulse. Has benefits if you have suspend cards. Also, you can just potentially like float it earlier in the game or float it when you have just like a single mana available. But I think you just put this in the cards that in the decks that care about playing from exile.
Pretty much all of those decks. I think if you don't care about playing from exile, this card could still be worth your time. I played for a little while. It turned out to be too good for my playgroup, so I took it apart. But Rionya Fire Dancer from Strixhaven. And that deck, the way that Rionya works is you cast a bunch of spells, and then you go to combat, and then you make a bunch of tokens based on the number of spells you cast. Basically, you're a storm comp for the turn. And you would just make a bunch of tokens of something that would kill at the table. But the idea with that deck was always you build up to one really big turn. And that's something that they've kind of leaned in with red for some time now, where you build up to this really big turn and then you just go off. and it's explosive. And I think suspend actually plays really well into that playstyle, because if you suspend four, then you know, okay, when the last suspend counter comes off, I'm going to get a bunch of extra gas. If I plan my big turn to be around that, then I can have an even bigger turn. So I feel like I'd probably play it in a deck like that, where it was very important to just like build a huge storm count and a big explosive turn.
Okay, seems sick. Any other things you want to say about Ecstatic Beauty before we move on?
Just that the art is gorgeous.
A nice little callback to Vincent and the Doctor. Do you want to read off the next card, though?
Yeah, so this one's gotten a lot of buzz. So this is Return the Past. 4 red for an enchantment. And it says, as long as it's your turn, each instant and sorcery card in your graveyard has flashback. Its flashback cost is equal to its mana cost.
This seems really sick. I often run like a lot of rummaging effects, and of course I run wheels in my red decks. So just being able to like just kind of keep churning through the new cards I draw by recasting my rummaging spells from out of my graveyard seems fantastic. Or just like dumping, you know, my hand with a wheel, but like still being able to recast all the cards seems awesome. I mean, 6 mana is a fair bit. It is a 6 mana to do nothing enchantment, but it's the kind of card where just like if you untap with it, or if you have just a ton of mana available from your dockside or whatever, then it seems amazing. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I also really like this card. Turns out that if you put Pass in Flames on an enchantment and just say, you know, every time it's your turn, you get to do Pass in Flames. That's pretty good. I do think that, as you said, it's a 6 mana do nothing enchantment. When you play it, it kind of falls into that same pattern where like red is building up to a big turn. And if you let it stick around, it's do nothing stuff without pressuring it enough. It's going to go off. And Return the Past will go off.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of these red enchantments lately, like Arcane Bombardment, Dual Vision, and I like it. Just like huge rewards for red Spellslinger decks. And, you know, of course, it is nice that like red has like rituals, like you can maybe get this out a little sooner with a Seething Song and then cast the Seething Song afterwards, like flash it back, or like, you know, get this out early with a Jessica's Will and then get more value out of that will later. Seems great. I love seeing cards like this.
Ready for the next one?
So the Flux is 2 red for an enchantment saga. The first chapter is the Flux deals 4 damage to target creature and opponent controls. And then chapters 2 through 5 are exile the top card of your library. You may play that card this turn. And then chapter 6 is add 6 red. So I think this is pretty sweet. Like, you know, I'm not, of course, typically running like 4 mana for like 4 damage to a creature at sorcery speed. But I do like that it front loads the value. I would happily run this in a saga deck. The fact that it has so many chapters is great for Tom Bombadil, because you want to have enough lore counters to give him hexproof and indestructible. And this card is just going to have a lot of counters for a very long time. Also in like a Prosper deck, you know, I've put in cards like Outpost Siege.
I was going to say this card seems like great value, because it's just, I play my Outpost Siege, it kills something, and then it begins to draw me cards for 4 turns.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So if, you know, if you're already running Outpost Siege, like why not just run this and get some immediate value so you don't even care if it gets blown up? So this seems like a pretty cool card. I'm into it.
Same. Absolutely. And like I said earlier, enchantments, board wipes, maybe you won't make it to chapter 6. But if you do, there's your big red turn. 6 free mana.
Absolutely. Do you want to read off the only green card we're going to cover today?
The lonely and yet incredibly powerful green card. Funnily enough, I think this is the second most expensive card in the whole set. All right, so this is Displaced Dinosaurs. It is 5 green for a creature dinosaur that is a 7/7. And it has, as a historic permanent enters the battlefield under your control, it becomes a 7/7 dinosaur creature in addition to its other types. And as a reminder, artifacts, legendaries, and sagas are historic.
I don't know a lot of decks that are like spewing a ton of sagas onto the battlefield. And there are some decks that are spewing a ton of legendaries on the battlefield, like I guess Recce, the History of Kamigawa. But it's really easy to spew a lot of artifacts onto the battlefield.
Oh boy.
Yeah, we got a lot of token types that happen to be artifacts. And so it's incredibly easy to just make this pop off. Like, what do you think are some of the decks that can utilize this best?
You've got the Lana-style decks that make a bunch of clues, the ones we talked about earlier. Then you also have all of the food decks, like, I'm going to say the name wrong, Guillaume. Mm-hmm. The new Sam and Frodo, and all of the commanders that deal with food over in the Lord of the Rings set. You have the commanders that are making a bunch of who don't even care what the artifact type is, like Jahira from Baldur's Gate or Malira from Dominar United. They're a red and green one, both the ones that turn them all into mana dorks. Well, this seems like a decent finisher for that kind of thing. Yeah, there's just a lot of them.
This seems incredible. I mean, it is 7 mana, but there's a world where you can like play a 7 mana thing and still like get it going. And also just like, you know, in your Lannis deck, you're going to cast it. You're immediately going to get another clue, and which becomes a 7/7. Or like you play this, you know, in your old Gnawbone deck, you go to combat, you get a ton of treasures, which all happen to be 7/7.
Make 7/7/7s.
Yes.
The dream.
Yeah. So I think it's pretty easy to like work this into a position where you're going to get like at minimum one other 7/7. Even in like that Frodo Sam deck, you know, you cast this, you go to combat, Sam makes a food at the beginning of combat. So like, I think the risk is relatively low. You're going to get something out of this. And once you like untap with it, then you're just popping off and it's incredible.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think this, I think food probably needed this more, in the fact that the food tokens are even more, they're the most useless token out of all the different mm-hmm. artifact tokens. Yeah. And it's been getting more win conditions, but is still hungry for them.
Pun intended.
Yes, pun intended. So I definitely think that this is probably the biggest boon to food, but any of those decks I'd be happy to play it in
for sure. Okay, like I said earlier, that was our one and only green card, so we're going to move into multicolor, and our first multicolor card is Blink. This is 2 blue-black for an enchantment saga. The first and third chapters are choose target creature, its owner shuffles it into their library, then investigates. And then the second and fourth chapters are create a 2/2 black alien angel artifact creature token with first strike, vigilance, and whenever an opponent casts a creature spell, this permanent isn't a creature until end of turn.
It made me blink because I had to read it twice.
Yeah, this has my vote for the most confusing card in the set. I definitely like read it wrong the first time, because this is the first time they've ever like laid out a saga in this way. So just be careful when you're playing with this card. Make sure you're like paying close attention to what the numbers on those chapter indicators actually say. But what do you think about Blink as a card, formatting aside?
I think it's pretty good. It seems like a good value play. It's a good value saga. It's one of the sagas I'd probably be happiest to recur and, blink back and forth on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice.
I can't take credit for that one. I think that the tokens are like, I guess are they kind of useless? I guess they're just kind of sack fodder. because you can't really block with them. It's pretty unrealistic to think you're going to block. And then if you attack with them, they need to have an instant speed spell, so probably you'll get in for 2 damage.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that is really like the flavor text part of the card. It's just like, they can't give you like 2 removal spells in rapid succession for 4 mana, so they gotta pad it out a little bit.
That's true. And the art on this saga has gotta be one of my favorite saga arts in the set. It feels so right out of a Doctor Who. Just right out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, they really like nailed the flavor of this one, like, you know, the going back and forth in time element of it is confusing, but it's flavorful, and if you are a Doctor Who fan, it will click in a way that, you know, the uninitiated might not appreciate.
For sure.
I like this card too. 2 kills is a pretty, or 2, like, you know, shuffles, whatever, is a solid deal for 4 mana. I'm happy to run this in my saga deck.
Is the only saga deck that can play this Bombadil, I guess?
Yes, that is true. Maybe there's probably like some design space available for like blue-black counter manipulation. Maybe we'll see something like that one day, but for right now, this is a Bombadil special.
Seems good in that deck though. All right. Next card. Gallifrey Falls / No More. So it is a card with fuse, and that means that you can cast one or both halves of the card from your hand when you choose to cast it that way. So I'm going to read each half of the card separately. So Gallifrey Falls is 4 red for an instant. Gallifrey Falls deals 4 damage to each creature. If a creature dealt damage this way would die this turn, exile it instead. And No More is 2 and a white for an instant. Any number of target creatures you control phase out.
I do love seeing the phasing answers to board wipes. Like No More protecting all of your guys, like, until your next turn, protects you from a lot more things than just like indestructible for a single turn would. I really like that half of the card. Gallifrey Falls, I think the rate here is just like, I can't get excited about it. I would be happy to pay 4. I'd be grumbling a little at 5 mana, and then at 6, I'm just like,
here's where I'm at with this card. And we talked a little bit about this with the counterspell earlier, and that is that 95% of the time, this card is just No More. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. But 4% of the time, that 4 damage bird wipe for 6 mana instant speed, that's what you're going to need. And that's what you're going to cast. And 1% of the time, you'll pay 9 mana and feel like a king.
9 mana is a big ask in a white-red color identity for sure. It's not super easy to ramp in this color identity. But I have been on a real like board wipe plus my guys are okay kick lately.
I think it's the way of the future.
Yeah, because we've just been getting like really aggressive rates for like we've always had good board wipes in white, and we're getting some more aggressive rates on the like protect your guys spells. It is nice that it gives me like everything I want in a single card. So I just don't have to draw the 2 halves of the combo, but 9 mana, 4 damage.
It's quite a bit for just 4 damage, but it will happen sometimes.
It will happen for sure.
I think my only other thought about this card is it's my classic worry that of the like protect my creatures versus board wipe arms race, which has led us to this point where we have Farewell. When are we going to have the thing that forces everything to phase back in first?
It's coming. Right? For sure.
And then what? And then what?
No, it has been funny to see like a ton of good, like indestructible grainers. And then like you said, Farewell and Sunfall. And then now all these phasing cards, like you're right. It is. It's not sustainable what's happening right now, but we'll see where it settles. I will read off the next card. This is The Day of the Doctor. It's 3 red-white for an enchantment saga. The first 3 chapters say exile cards from the top of your library until you exile a legendary card. You may play that card for as long as the Day of the Doctor remains on the battlefield. Put the rest of those exiled cards on the bottom of your library in a random order. And then the 4th chapter is choose up to 3 doctors. You may exile all other creatures. If you do, the Day of the Doctor deals 13 damage to you. A couple things to note. If you play this in the War Doctor, the way the War Doctor is worded, like whenever you exile one or more, so anytime you have something that says exile cards from the top of your library until you do whatever, then those actually count as separate instances of exiling a card. So if you have like 1 legendary card in your deck, and when you play Day of the Doctor, you like exile the top 40 cards of your library or something, that's 40 time counters on the Day of the Doctor. And then he just swings and nukes somebody. So in that deck, this could potentially be incredibly powerful, provided you build your deck the right way. I don't think it's that hard to drastically drop the number of legendary cards in your deck. What is like the most busted legendary card you can think of that would justify cutting almost every other legend out of your deck?
Well, it's clearly Zatalpa, but I don't know. I mean, there's some real bangers.
Let's say you run like 3 or fewer legendary cards in your deck. Would it be worth it to do that, to restrict your deck in that way, if one of them was like the One Ring? Is that good enough?
Oh, that's right. That is legendary, isn't it? I think if you're playing this card and you're not playing the War Doctor, which it makes sense that it works really well with him. This is his saga specifically. So clearly it was templated this way because of that. I think if you're not playing the War Doctor, then you probably are playing at least 3 legends in your deck for this card to hit. Because otherwise it's a whiff, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think that'd be too hard to narrow down to that. I think that depending on the deck, on average, I find myself with somewhere between 3 and 6 legendary permanent legendary cards in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they usually are some of the better cards in the deck just because the way legends tend to get tuned.
Sure.
So if you were going to play this card and you wanted to scrap out some of the legends that you think are going to be less generally useful, I think that it would be probably worth it.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of like this as like a pseudo tutor. Also worth noting, one of those legendary cards could be like a Hall of Heliod's Generosity. So you could try to keep it going.
Yes. Forever. Yeah.
I guess we should talk for a second at least about this 4th chapter. Okay, 13 damage is a lot. It's nothing to sneeze at. But hey, exiling all of their creatures, like if you're about to get Alpha Striked. Well, okay, actually, if everyone knows this is coming, then they're just not going to play a lot of creatures onto the board. Either that, or they're going to try to kill you before you get to chapter 4. How do you think people are going to play with this like hanging over their heads?
That's going to depend on your play group. I've played with a group where if you sit with an Oblivion Stone or a Niven Rules disc, they just beat the tar out of you until you're forced to crack it. And then I've played ones where they're just cowards about it, and they just are afraid to play their stuff, and they beg you to crack the disc. And so like your mileage is going to vary. I think for me, the way this card is going to read is either I care about the first 3 chapters or I care about the last chapter. And if I care about the last chapter, it's probably because I'm playing the new 2-mana companion that lets you read ahead. And then I'm just using it as a board mm-hmm. wipe. Straight up a 5-mana board wipe in my Saga Historic deck. I mean, I would definitely play this in the War Doctor, hands down, maybe even with no legendaries in my deck, because then you get like 80 counters.
I love it. That's awesome. It also seems cool to just play some of those cards that allow you to manipulate your Saga counters, just have like a random nesting grounds in your mana base, so that like if you're in one of those metagames where like nobody wants to commit creatures into like an imminent Day of the Doctor, then you can just like keep removing lore counters from it. Keep like the Sword of Damocles swinging above everyone's head. That seems fun too.
I think this card is good in Tom Bombadil. I mean, obviously it's a saga, but like three chapters is a long time. You can use it to grab a bunch of your like legendary support cards for Tom, especially like non-creatures. Tom's not a doctor, obviously, so he would die from the last ability if you chose to trigger it. But even if you don't trigger the board wipe effect, you still go and get a saga that costs, what, four or less or five or less?
Yeah, seems good. You know, this card, the more I talk about it, the more I like it. Fantastic design there. Okay, do you want to read off the next card?
This is a fun little one. This is Ace's Baseball Bat. It's a 2-mana legendary artifact equipment. And it has equipped creature gets +3/+0. As long as equipped creature is attacking, it has first strike and must be blocked by a Dalek if able. Changelings, look out. So it has equip 3, but it also has equip legendary creature 1. So for me, this seems like an excellent card for Voltron, but in particular, it makes me think of the 3-mana red uncommon legend from original Dominaria block.
Oh, Valduk?
Yeah, Valduk. I love Valduk. And just the idea of how cheap it is, one to equip, you get those 3-1s, they go all day.
Yeah, the power to cost ratio on this equipment is amazing.
4 legends.
Yes, 4 legends. And I just love that it's skewed so that most of the like amount you're paying is, of course, in the cost of the card rather than the equip cost. So, hey, if my Voltron commander dies, it only costs 1 to re-equip. Easy slam dunk into so many Voltron decks. Great addition to the format.
Yeah, 100%. And you know what? 1% of the time, you're going to blow out the Changeling player and it'll be funny.
Yes. Get the hell out of here, Morophon. Next card is going to be Confession Dial. It's 3-mana artifact. When it enters the battlefield, surveil 3, and it has tap, target legendary creature card in your graveyard gains escape until end of turn. The escape cost is equal to its mana cost, plus exile 3 other cards from your graveyard. So you may cast it from your graveyard for its escape cost this turn. So I was thinking, like, in a commander with like a powerful death trigger that doesn't have access to good reanimation, this could just be like a great engine for you. I was thinking like Yosei the Morning Star. This is one of the easier ways to just keep him going and keep your opponents locked down. But what do you think about Confession Dial?
I mean, I think that your mention is kind of right on the money to as a starting place. Just the idea that colors that have trouble with direct reanimation are going to love this card for their legends. I think it's worth noting that the quantity of legends that we get and the fact that because they're legends, they tend to be higher quality cards than your average mm-hmm. card mean that more than just your commander may fall under this category. I know that I'm looking to maybe try it out in my mono green legendary deck, which recurs okay, but not usually directly to the battlefield, which is kind of what I'm liking about it. And you also get your cast triggers from it because you are casting it from your graveyard. Also, Surveil 3 is decent. I love Surveil.
Yeah, I'm hoping that sometime soon we get the Surveil rewarding commander that we all deserve. Are you ready to move on to the next card?
Yes, I'll read this guy. So this is Cybermen Squadron. It's a 7-mana artifact creature Cyberman. It is a 5/5, and it says non-legendary artifact creatures you control have myriad. And I immediately picked up a copy of this card and put it into my colorless Graz deck, my Juggernaut deck that I have, and I'm super pumped about it. I love this card. I think that it's a great finisher for the colorless archetype. And I think he slams right into Alubo, Ancient Witness, because when your myriad tokens come into play, they're tapped and attacking, so Alubo will count them for his trigger when he blasts any target and scries a bunch for you. So I just really like this card.
I mentioned earlier, like, you know, my deck that I'm excited to toss like the Dalek drone into. It's basically like 4-color artifacts, and it's got a ton of ways to cheat artifacts into play, reanimate artifacts, runs like basically every good artifact creature with like a solid ETB. So I'm really excited to put Cyberman Squadron in that deck and just like give my Necron Deathmark Myriad, give my duplicate Myriad, my Meteor Golem Myriad, whatever.
Like I said earlier, when you give Myriad to things that aren't supposed to have Myriad, it feels really good.
Let's move on to the next card. This is Psychic Paper. 2 mana for an artifact equipment. As it becomes attached to a creature, choose a creature card name and a creature type. Equipped creature has Ward 1, it can't be blocked, and its name and creature type are the last chosen name and creature type, and has Equip 2. Playing with card names, that's all fun and good. Maybe if you've got your like Urborg Panther, Spirit of the Night combo going in your deck, this could do something there. But really the headline is the fact that it's just like 2 to play, 2 to equip, and equipped creature can't be blocked. There's only a handful of equipment like that. It's like Trailblazer's Boots and I think Prowler's Helm. For the decks that care about those cards, namely Voltron, like this is just another addition to that pantheon. And hey, it gives Ward 1. That's relevant.
Yeah, I mean, it makes him pay the 1. That is the thing. I will say this is one of my favorite cards in the set just because it encapsulates what he uses Psychic Paper for so much. Just shoves it in someone's face as he's walking past. Shall I read the next one?
Go for it.
All right, so this is the Rotating Fireplace. It is a 3-mana artifact. And Rotating Fireplace enters the battlefield tapped with a time counter on it. Tap, add an amount of colorless equal to the number of time counters on Rotating Fireplace. 4 and tap, time travel. Activate only as a sorcery. And as a reminder, to time travel means that for each suspended card you own and each permanent you control with a time counter on it, you can add or remove a time counter.
This seems like a good addition to, I was thinking like Azuri 3.0, the Proliferate Azuri. In that deck, I'm running Everflowing Chalice. I'm running Astral Cornucopia. They are just fantastic mana generators in that deck because I'm already doing a ton of proliferation. Even the colorless off of Everflowing Chalice, I don't mind so much. You know, I have plenty of mana sinks to use it for.
You just get a lot of it. And I think that those decks, any proliferate deck is going to enjoy the mana artifacts that make mana equal to the counters on them. I think we have like 4 or 5 of them now with this one. And I'd play them all for sure. How do you feel about the time travel mode on it?
It only like affecting things with time counters. I mean, certainly not relevant in like the proliferate decks that are running this card. And then
not the majority.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Man, I need to get a better sense of like how valuable time traveling is because there's so few decks that are like actively trying to suspend things that I am not certain this has a place outside of like just the 10th Doctor deck and that's it.
That's kind of where I'm at with it, especially since like it comes into play tapped and then it's 4 and tap, so essentially 5 mana. And yes, it does increase the amount of mana this makes the turn after that, but that is a lot.
Yeah, it's very slow. That part might just be a little bit of flavor text because of like what this card did in the episode. But that's fine. I think it has uses regardless. I think with that, we can move on to the very last card we're going to be covering today. This is Sonic Screwdriver. It's a 3-mana artifact. It taps to add 1 mana of any color. It has 1 tap, untap another target artifact, 2 tap, scry 1, and 3 tap, target creature can't be blocked this turn. What do you think about Sonic Screwdriver?
If you're running the Voltaic Key, Manifold Key stuff, then I would run this card too.
Yeah, that's basically what I was thinking as well. It's not incredibly embarrassing as like a 3-cost mana rock, just like as a mana lith. And then unlike Voltaic Key and Manifold Key, if you don't have like good artifacts to untap, like at least it has that mode as a failure case.
Yeah, it always makes you a mana and sometimes it'll make your guy unblockable to get in there.
Yeah. And like if you're in top deck mode or something, you can scry with it. So like on the show, it does a whole lot of things. And I think this is the kind of like 3-mana rock I like to see where it just has a lot of additional hooks in value, and it's going to be useful kind of no matter what is going on. If you need mana, it provides it. If you've got way too much mana, it gives you a sink for it. So I think this is a pretty sweet card.
I agree. I'm definitely going to try it in a few of my decks. I have one deck that uses the keys, and it'll definitely go in there, and then maybe a couple of others just to kind of get a feel for how they intersect with some of the other mana rocks and just generally as a value piece.
With that, we have gotten to the end of our set review. And I want to ask you, how do you feel about the main deck cards in Doctor Who overall?
I thought it was a pretty good crop. Like, for the most part, they added really interesting cards that are going to be fun to play with. If you care about Doctor Who, they're full of flavor. If you don't care about Doctor Who, I think that they are kind of hit or miss. I've heard a lot of talk about how so many of the Doctor Who cards, unlike other previous properties, are just like some British person on a still backdrop in London.
Oh, sure.
And I mean, that's not untrue. Mm-hmm. That is exactly what some of these card arts are. And I can see why that might be kind of jarring by comparison to the properties we've had in the past. But I'd say you should give the cards a chance if you do fall in that category, because there's just some really interesting designs that that explore space that I have been excited to explore. And definitely there is a higher complexity going on here than what I would consider to be a beginner level product, for sure.
Yeah, I agree with that. This is a much more fiddly product, I think, than like most of the Lord of Ring decks or most of the like Warhammer 40K decks. It's possible that their like market research said that players could handle more complexity, or maybe it's just like the only way to execute, you know, this sci-fi deck with a lot of just like a lot of detail that you want to reflect on the cards. Hard to say.
Could be a bit of both. And historically, sci-fi as a genre tends to be more innately complex. Mm-hmm. In my own experience designing tabletop games that for sci-fi versus fantasy, it's always harder to make a simpler rule set for sci-fi than it is to make it for fantasy.
Interesting. I wonder, that could be an interesting clue for like future Universes Beyond products as they like get new properties. Like maybe we might see just a gradient of complexity depending on the genre and like the audience they're going for. Like if they did like a Disney Princesses Universes Beyond, I would expect to see a lower level of complexity there.
I agree. And I think Lord of the Rings is like the most entry level, the most basic complexity that you can bring in a new person to Magic. I actually found a lot of those cards and the set in general to be pretty new player friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And that works really well with the property and how Lord of the Rings is kind of like the genesis for a lot of fantasy and its tropes. And then you have things like Doctor Who, and it's just like sci-fi is already complicated. Time travel is the most complicated sci-fi can get.
Yeah, yeah.
So
they can handle it, maybe, is the idea.
I guess that's the hope, or they have to. I mean, what other choice do they have if they're going to execute it correctly? I got to admit that I thought Warhammer was going to be more complex than it was, but I think it's probably because Warhammer falls well within the Mirrodin sphere of sci-fi gritty conflict that has horror elements, but doesn't really intersect as much with space, because mm-hmm. it's almost always taking place on like a physical battlefield on a planet or space station.
Yeah, hard to say. And it also is, that was like their first major release, so I'm sure
they had to be careful with it.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe they've learned since then, and their processes have possibly changed. it's difficult to say from outside the building.
I think the only two things that I'm most concerned about with the product is just that Cyber Conversion and Everybody Lives are both very staple-y cards, and I always get nervous when I see incredibly staple-y cards in a pre-con.
Mm-hmm.
Especially a Universes Beyond pre-con that might have a tighter print run.
It was also a concern of mine. I think Everybody Lives is, I would assume, broad enough flavor-wise that it's something they like could reprint. It's kind of like the reprieve of the set, in that, like, yeah, it makes sense in this property with this art, whatever. But the name is flavor neutral enough that you could probably get away with it in some random set. But Cyber Conversion, yeah, that one strikes me as like, I mean, it says Cyberman on the card. Like, what? How are you going to get this reprinted anywhere? That one definitely seems tricky. They might have to do that like SLX trick in order to get this reprinted in normal set, and that's why it's one of the cards I wanted to pick up sooner rather than later.
I definitely agree. I also think that, and this is just an interesting thing about the set and what seems to be true going forward based on the Fallout decks that are going to be coming out at the beginning of next year in March.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the Companion Collector Booster model appeared to be taken pretty well by the market. I actually also liked that model. I don't usually buy collector boosters. I didn't buy any of Doctor Who either, but I think that the idea of if you buy the decks, you get one of every card at least.
Mm-hmm.
And then the collector boosters add more quantity of cards into the market.
Mm-hmm.
And then two, that's where you can put your special collectibles. And so people are still scalping and poaching the decks a little bit, but not as much as they might be.
Yes.
If there was no collector boosters that had more chaseable versions.
Yeah. I'm very curious, how the Doctor Who collector boosters end up selling, because there's a couple key differences between, we know for a fact, like the Lord of the Rings ones sold like hotcakes. We know that, like, they were at one point, like a collector booster box was going for like $150 above like the quote unquote MSRP.
Yeah, it reached $500 a box, which is insane.
So clearly, like, there was a huge amount of demand for those. And there's a couple key differences between those collector boosters and these ones for Doctor Who. So one, there's no One Ring. So there's no lottery ticket that people are chasing. And two, the Lord of the Rings collector boosters also had those like reskins of popular like format staples. Like, you would get like an Ancient Tomb, but with like a Lord of the Rings skin on it.
Oh, yeah, that's true. They did have the other serialized cards as well. And notably in those collector boosters, surge foiling was incredibly rare. Mm-hmm. And the surge foil versions of those special reskinned cards were very expensive. They definitely give out surge foiling like candy in the Doctor Who boosters.
Yeah, I'm noticing that just like looking at prices on TCG Player. It's like, I can get a surge foil of this for like $5? What?
I watched a box opening that Pleasant Kenobi did and just watched how many surge foils. It's like you're guaranteed two per pack, and then oftentimes most packs have like between four and six of them.
Yeah, crazy.
So it's just, they're just everywhere. So unless you get it on like the variant, there are serialized cards in there, so
mm-hmm.
they're just not One Ring lottery tickets.
So I'm curious to see how the collector boosters for this do. I think it definitely is going to inform future products. I would expect that, like, if the Doctor Who collector boosters don't sell that well, then we might see more like reskins of staples, if not more lottery tickets. Okay, I'm going to talk about myself for a sec, like my personal beliefs. I don't like gambling. I really don't. And I don't like putting literal lottery tickets in packs, because I don't know about you, but I saw a lot of people making like not responsible financial decisions around the Lord of the Rings collector boosters because of the One Ring.
that business model is really icky to me. Sorry, this, like I said, this is my personal beliefs. I think like seeing cool format staples, that's nice, but I think that people won't like go crazy and like, you know, blow their paycheck on collector boosters if that's all you're doing. But lottery tickets really unsettling for me.
The circus around the One Ring was absolutely insane and really unhealthy, both for the people who have issues with that type of gambling, but also just like, and this is me on my tangent, I think it's incredibly unhealthy for people looking out into the hobby, because I mean, we're already a luxury hobby. Anybody who doesn't think Magic is a luxury hobby is kidding themselves. This game is insanely expensive, no matter how you play it. But the perception of the world towards Magic when they're looking in and they're seeing the One Ring lottery going on was not positive. Like, there was a lot of buzz. There was a lot of even hype, I would say. A lot of people were interested in the game in a way they never were. And maybe all publicity is good publicity in the end. But all I got out of that as a person who's on the inside is everybody looking at me like I'm a sucker. I guess I am. I spend a bunch of money on cardboard. So what can I really say?
I am hoping, and this might be naive of me, I am hoping all the things that they're doing for Lord of the Rings, you know, the second release with like the holiday edition and the new cards and the one of one ring lottery ticket. I'm hoping that like all of these kind of really like more marketing things, like the decision of how to release the product and the decision of like having this super ultra chase thing in there. I am hoping they were trying to pump up sales of the Lord of the Rings specifically so that they could point to it as like a success in order to get bigger properties interested. And maybe it was the success of Lord of the Rings that led to them ultimately like landing that deal with Marvel.
I was going to bring up Marvel because here's my second worry / thought. And that is that as Magic gets bigger properties with more cachet, those properties are going to want to create the same buzz, because Lord of the Rings certainly got a public boost in the mind from that. And unlike Magic, none of the negative aspects of that press hit Lord of the Rings.
That is true. Like, they might be able to charge like more licensing fees to the next game that comes along wanting to use their IP because of this.
Exactly. So that just makes me think like, oh God, what did they promise Marvel to get this deal? are we gonna have a one of one Infinity Gauntlet?
Yeah, I hope not. But now that you're saying it, it does sound like it might be more likely. And this is, I don't like that. I don't support it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I also don't support it. But I mean, I think that at the very least, these what I consider to be tier two universes beyond, because there's like the Lord of the Rings model, which is the tentpole set. So that's Lord of the Rings, Final Fantasy, Marvel. And then there is the tier two, which are your Warhammer, your Doctor Who, your Fallout.
Mm-hmm.
I guess your Assassin's Creed, if you care about that property. And then you've got the Secret Lair ones, which are like Princess Bride or whatever.
Yeah. Well, okay. One thing I wanted to... God, okay. This is a 2-hour episode. We do...
Oh, I'm so sorry for starting this conversation. No,
yeah, because I could talk about this forever, but I think this might be a whole other episode to get into, because I have a lot more thoughts than I have shared here.
We should sit down with like a round table, get like four people on the line.
Yeah.
And just do like a big round table discussion about this.
Yeah. Okay. We'll save this for a future episode. You all have been very patient to listen up until this point, and thank you very much. But even more than all our listeners, I want to thank you, Ben, for coming back on the show and rounding out the end of the Doctor Who pre-con set review.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it. I will be happy to come back another time for other things in the future, should you need me.
Of course. Yeah, no, this has been a great collaboration. I really appreciate all your help, and I'm sure we're going to find more opportunities to get you back on the show in the future. All right, with that, thank you everyone for listening, and that wraps up Doctor Who. Give me like a Doctor Who catchphrase to close the episode with.
So there's no reason to have a catchphrase. All you need is this.
There we go. Perfect.
Dun, 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 dun.
You can reach out to me on Twitter. I'm at Commander Theory.
And on Twitter, I am at Fat Bartleby.
You can also email us at commandertheory@gmail.com. Our theme song is Lincoln Continental by Nick Cage. You can check him out on SoundCloud.
And if you're interested in some other creative projects I'm working on, I have a band you can check out. We are a pink punk, pop punk band called The Have-Nots, all one word like cosmonauts. You can listen to all of our music for free right now. You can just head over to thehavenots.bandcamp.com. That is thehavenauts.bandcamp.com. And check us out. Let me know what you think.